Good to be here with you this morning, and appreciate so very much the opportunity of gathering like this. I think that all of us probably do as God's people, particularly the family of God here in this place. Maybe I'm just too loud for that. I hadn't said anything though when that happened. So we're going to continue our study this morning of family. We've had a couple lessons already. I'll briefly mention them here in just a moment. As a preacher, there needs to be sermons on family. Need to be preached. As a preacher, I'm aware of that. The hard part for a preacher of preaching on the family is that throughout the sermon, he's very much aware, I am, of my own shortcomings as a father, husband. Though it makes it kind of difficult. But what I want everyone that listens to any time I preach on the family or any other subject for that matter is, glean what you will from the Word of God. And know that standing before you is not someone who claims to have done everything the way it was supposed to be, the ideal way. And I guess that's true of any man that stands up here. We recognize that the only thing infallible about the situation is the Word, not his own life. So I'm very much aware, and that makes it a little bit harder. You know the old saying, I haven't heard it in a while, but people used to say, boy, you really stepped on my toes. And I always tell them, well, the only toes that I know about gotten stepped on were my own. I don't know about yours, but I know mine did. And so just to preface this lesson with that. This one is about training our children to know our children. The passage in Deuteronomy 6 talks about the need for them, of course, to know the Word of God and then to train their children with it. And we talked about already in the previous lessons, one of them was knowing God and being able to relate to God as a father and to see how he treats his children. And we can relate to them as a father. And then as we relate through him, through the Word, that's our only means of being able to get to know God and relating to him as our father through the Word. That's all we have. We don't imagine anything. We have to look at what the Word says. Then we talked about in the other lesson, second one last week, the need to know ourselves, to know God's expectation of us. What exactly are the responsibilities that he has given to us? And the great potential that is involved for not only ourselves, but for and our children, but for the church and even for the nation. Because the family is the building block. Families are of a nation. So this is not all that we need to know. We need to know our children. We need to know that they are a gift from God. In the 127th Psalm, verses 3 through 5, it talks about that. Children are a heritage, a gift from the Lord, and they are to be looked upon in that way, to be seen as something that is a great responsibility, a gift that's been put in our hands. And we would not take a gift that someone gives us, a very valuable gift, and treat it carelessly. Nor should we do that with our children, because again, the future will depend upon them. The future of the church, the future of our nation, as far as that goes. Now, we need to make an effort to understand them. That's why we're talking about training children, know our children. We can't train them if we don't know them. Remember God's confidence in Abraham? God is determined he's going to destroy the cities of the plains. But he makes a statement over there with respect to Abraham that I think is applicable to what we're talking about here. The principle is involved in that, and that's in Genesis 18 and verse 19. As God is making plans for this destruction, He talks about in verse 19, Abraham, he says, I have chosen him in order that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, in order that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. And so he determines then he's going to go to Abraham and let him know what he's going to do. He had confidence in Abraham. You might say that God had faith in Abraham, but only because Abraham had faith in God. Though that worked both ways. And what we do when we're training our children, we need to set in motion these patterns that are going to last a lifetime. Very familiar passage, I think, to us, Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Some, I think, put too much emphasis on that and almost think that it's a guarantee. It's not a guarantee. But it is trying to tell us that there are things that we can do in training our children that's going to last them the rest of their life. They're going to do some things the same way the rest of their life. I would think back on something simple. You learned how to tie your shoes. Now you're 25, 30, 35, 40, 50 years old or more. You still tie your shoes the same way? I do. Well, why do I do that? Well, because I got trained a certain way, and it's just stayed with me. That's an application of this passage. Now, certainly it involves spiritual training, and we hope to put into place in their lives things that will last them a lifetime. And that's what this verse is trying to emphasize, that you start when they're children and you train them, and it will stay with them. It's going to be a part of their life. And of course, Ephesians 6, verse 4, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, bring them up in the nurture admonition of the Lord. But we need to understand them. We can't train them if we don't understand them. We need to remember they're not adults, at least for some years to come. They're like Peter talked about in a spiritual vein, but it's still true, certainly, or it wouldn't even be a good illustration for Peter to use. As newborn baby, desire the sincere milk of the word that you may grow thereby. You start out on the milk of the word, spiritually. As a baby starts out on milk, physically. So our children start as babies. They are completely dependent upon us. We have to train them. Do not leave them to train themselves. That's going to be a disaster. But remember that they are children. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Paul was establishing a fact that some people still don't recognize, but that the scriptures would one day be complete, that they would not have to see things darkly, I think the King James says. You not have to know in part and prophesy in part, because in verse 10, the perfect is going to come, the completed revelation that God intended for us to have. But he uses an illustration about children. He says, when I was a child, I used to speak as a child, think as a child, reason as a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. Don't all wives wish their husbands would do that? But what's the point? There was a time, Paul is talking about, when his thought processes were not complete. He was immature. And he thought and reasoned things out on the level of a child. But of course now, with a completed revelation, we don't have to do that. We can be full grown. That's the point of the illustration. But again, it's true in the physical sense. Our children cannot be expected to reason on the same level that we do. That's why they need our training, because they're not capable of that. Hopefully, they will be one day, and they will cease to think and reason and speak as a child. But they don't start out that way. And so it's important as we're training them to recognize their children. A good friend of mine, son-in-law, was deployed to, I think it was Iraq at the time, been a few years ago now. Had a daughter and a son. The son was about 5 years old, and I just saw on Facebook where he's 17 now, so it's been about 12 years ago. So he was talking to his grandson, who was having trouble, naturally, with his dad being away. And my friend said to him something that I think was pretty typical, probably. He said, "You know, Daddy's not going to be here for a while. You're going to have to be the man of the house." Little boy said, "But Pop-Pop," that's what he called his grandpa, I think it was Pop-Pop. "Pop-Pop, I'm just a kid." Pretty mature thinking already at that age. But what's the point here I'm using that for? He was just a kid. To really expect him to step in and take over and fill the shoes of his father, and which, of course, that's not what my friend was talking about. It's you know, you got to be the man of the house. We don't reasonably expect that's going to literally happen. But that's a way of trying to say, you know, you got to be brave and so forth. But no, he couldn't be expected to take over for the father because he's not a mature person. Well, can you remember when you were a child? It'll help you in rearing your own children to think, reflect back on what kind of level of thinking did you had when they were at a, when you were at a particular age, as you struggle to try to get them to move beyond that in their maturity. There are some needful reminders. Let's talk to them about the value of their soul. What is the value of a soul? What did Jesus say? What if a person could have all the riches in the world? Would that be worth the value of a soul? No, certainly not. Matthew 16:26. What will a man be profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Their soul is valuable, and each one of them has a soul. Answer their questions. Again, Deuteronomy chapter 6. Whenever they have a question, when you're walking by the way, when you rise up, when you sit down, at every opportunity, answer their questions. They're going to have a lot of questions. My youngest son asks a lot of questions. He asks questions all the time. I finally told him one day, I said, "Son, I'm going to limit you to 500 questions a day. It's all you can have." And he would realize himself once in a while. He said, "Dad, am I getting close to my limit?" I said, "Yeah, you're getting pretty close." He really literally wasn't, I don't think. But he could sure ask questions. Well, we're there to give them the answers. Again, they are a gift. Hannah prayed that she could have a son, Samuel, recognizing that he would be a gift from God, but it was a gift that she gave back to God. And we already mentioned Psalm 127, verse 3. Children are a heritage or a gift from the Lord. Our children have a right to expect certain things of us. Acceptance. Not acceptance of their wrongdoing. Love, praise, protection, security. Children, I don't know about you. I grew up in such a privileged situation with respect to my parents. I could not have, if I had been given opportunity to choose parents, made a better choice. I never worried about things. I never got concerned about things. I never had to. I felt completely secure and loved as a child and accepted. Well, there was discipline when I did things wrong. But I always knew I was one of them and I belonged to them. Now, my brother tried to tell me one time I was adopted. Because I was making the observation, we were all standing around, and I said, "You know, I don't really resemble any of you that closely. At least I didn't think so." And my older brother said, "Well, we've been hating to tell you this all your life, but you were adopted." My mom assured me that I was not. She wanted me to have the security that, and we were grown-ups when he told me that, so I didn't really believe him. But the point of it is here, I never had to worry about that. Make sure your parents know that they are secure and that you have accepted them and the challenge of raising them, and that they don't have to worry about that. Does mommy love me? Does daddy love me? Let them know. Make sure they know that you do. As God in Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6 talks about the fact that we ought not be fraught all the time with cares and concern because he cares for us. Now, that doesn't mean we don't put limits on their behavior. We have to. Because after all, we're preparing them to be independent someday. And they need to understand when they get out there on their own in the adult world, you can't just do everything you want to do. You can't have everything you want to have. But there's responsibility that goes along with it. And so these limits, of course, are necessary. But let's also recognize their potential in the family and what they can bring to the family, what they can contribute to the family, because children can. They bring happiness. They bring spontaneity to situations. They just contribute so much to the family. They're a part of the family, and they don't need to be taught that they are the center of everything, that everything revolves around them. I think that's something that's gone that direction in the last few decades, that a lot of parents have decided, well, I want my child to know he is the center of all of our activity. No, that's not right. There was a relationship that already existed before that child came into the world, and that's the husband and wife relationship. A family revolves around the husband and the wife. And the children are important as they are, though. That relationship is secondary to the relationship a husband and wife have. So we need to make a wholehearted effort to understand them. Have confidence in them. Try to instill within them to recognize their own ability to achieve whatever it is at school or whatever the realm is. Instill some confidence in them. Help them to grow up being a confident person. Not an arrogant person, but confident. But they need discipline and training, and we're going to look at some negative things here to begin with. We must not do what? Well, Paul said we must not provoke them to wrath or discourage them in the Colossian passage. Break their spirit by making demands of them that are unreasonable, by setting a bar so high on some particular thing they could not possibly achieve it. They're going to become exasperated. New American Standard says, fathers, do not exasperate your children, that they may not lose heart. If we set a standard, and we're not talking about watering down God's standard, but just in everyday things in the family, make sure you're reasonable in the demands that you make. You could not demand that a 3-year-old mow the yard. You couldn't even demand that an 8- or 9-year-old kid perhaps go out and mow the yard. And then punish him for not knowing how to start the lawnmower. And that's a stupid illustration, but that's what I'm talking about. Don't make demands that are completely unreasonable, that will frustrate them because they are not capable of doing what it is that you've demanded of them. Important as we train our children and try to get to know them and know what their ability levels are and then assign them responsibility. Give them things to do based upon their ability to carry that out so that they do not get frustrated or exasperated. Don't act only in anger. 2 Peter 1 verse 6 talks about adding to our knowledge self-control. It's awfully easy to be upset about something else and then take it out on the children, to lash out in anger. I think there was probably times when I disciplined my boys with a little bit more, I don't know what the word is, zeal than I should have because of I was angry about what they did. And we got a right to be upset when they do things that are wrong, but that should not guide our response to that. We got to somehow try to calm ourselves down on the inside and then deal with it properly. It's awfully easy to retaliate because of anger and blow the situation out of proportion. You ever done that with your children? Sometimes I recognized I did. There's only one thing you can do after you've done that and you realize it. You go to that child and you apologize. You say, I'm sorry. I just blew that thing way out of proportion. And ask for their forgiveness. And you know what? They'll give it to you. And that, again, is training them. Here's what you do when you blow it, so to speak. This is what you got to do about it. You got to go make it right. Don't withhold affection from them. There's a word in Romans chapter 1, verse 31, in that list of awful things that characterize a society who forgets God. That's what this is all about in this part of the chapter. Here's what people will descend into. Here's the depth that they will sink to when they fail to acknowledge God. All these things are going to start happening. And of course, we look around. Yeah, that's where we are in a society. But in verse 31, the King James uses the word without, or the phrase rather, without natural affection. New American Standard just simply says, unloving. This word for love, used in the negative, but it's family love. Do not withhold the affection that you should have as a member of your family. Do not withhold that love from them. Some kids, unfortunately, grow up without knowing that the parent loves them. Imagine what that does to them, where they should find that acceptance and praise and love, and they don't get it. It's damaging. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, it's not talking about a child, except as a child of God. And it appears to be talking about the man from 1 Corinthians that was properly disciplined, finally, who did make things right, but now was running into some people, at least at Corinth, enough of a problem that Paul seemed to be addressing it here in chapter 2, they wouldn't forget it. They wouldn't let go of what had happened. And so Paul has to talk to them about it. And he says this, sufficient for such a one is this punishment inflicted by the majority, so that on the contrary you should rather forgive and comfort him, lest somehow such a one be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. Wherefore I urge you to reaffirm your love for him. Well, that principle works in the family too. After you have disciplined your child, you've let them know that what they did was not right. You have punished them in some way, whatever you think is appropriate. It may be that that child is not too sure after that. I don't know, does mommy love me? Does daddy still love me? Reaffirm your love toward them. Let them know you're still loved. You know, kids have a way of, you send them to their room after you've punished them, and they finally will come back out. You ever see a little kid do this? Creeps back out. Mom's in the living room or wherever, or dad, and they're not too sure whether they should come back in there or not yet. And this is little children I've seen it in. Pretty soon they get a little bit closer, a little bit closer. There's nothing wrong with reaching out and saying, come here. You want to reaffirm your love for them. You want them to understand, yes, I had to punish you, but it doesn't mean I don't love you. That's what they need you to do for this brother in Christ. Here's some things we must do. Nurture them, Ephesians 6, verse 4. Yes, it involves chastening. We could talk about Hebrews chapter 12 rather. Take God's manual, the Word of God, and use that, apply that. We got the perfect parenting manual here. We really don't need another one. They sell all kinds of manuals out there for parents, and they may have some good things in them, but you really don't need one. My folks, I think rather successfully, raised 7 children, and I don't remember ever seeing any manual around the home but this one. They were available. Dr. Spock had his books out back in those days. And a lot of people bought them, and they found out later his advice wasn't very good. And if memory serves me correctly, I don't think he even had any kids. Seemed to me like I picked up on that along the way. But he knew how to do it. Trained them. Don't depend upon school. Don't depend upon other people to train your children. You train them. It's your responsibility. What do I teach them? To fear the Lord. I teach them that their whole responsibility, the reason they are here, fear God and keep His commandment. That's what I teach them. To have that kind of respect for God, to love God, and to show that love through obedience. Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. To love God, to say you love God, but not do what God says, is to not tell the truth. As simple as that. They must understand that as they grow up, ultimately they are going to have a choice that they're going to have to make. They're going to have to choose the narrow way or the broad way. They're going to have to choose the narrow way that leads unto life or the broad way that leads to destruction. And that it is going to be their choice someday. Now, while they're in our home, we can control their behavior. We can determine to that extent how they're going to live. But someday they're going to have to choose for themselves, and they need to know that someday they're going to have that. Not just that opportunity, but that responsibility. And it comes with consequences. We need to teach them about that choice. They may feel like, well, I just have to do everything mommy and daddy says. That's right. Someday you're going to have to make your own choices. And they're going to find out when they reach that point. In many respects, it was better when mom and dad decided everything for me. Been a lot of times in my adult life when I thought, boy, it sure would be easier if my dad or my mom could make all these decisions. Didn't work that way. Certainly do not abuse our children. A great problem in our society. Remember what the advocates of abortion told us years ago when they were saying we need to have abortion on demand, that a lot of these women, they have babies, they're not prepared to have a child, they don't want to have a child, but they go ahead and have the child anyway, and it's because that we don't allow them to abort those children that we have all of this child abuse going on. And that if we'll just allow them to get rid of these unwanted children, the problem of child abuse will begin to go away. Guess what? They were wrong about that. Child abuse got worse. Well, of course it's going to get worse because you're telling people you don't have to respect human life. So why should they respect it anymore, whether it's in the womb or outside of the womb? But we're not talking about, when we talk about training our children, abusing them. Do not abuse your children. And most importantly, do not abuse them spiritually. Now that happens if you train them, if you let them live without discipline. If you fail to discipline them, then you're abusing them. Worse than any kind of physical abuse, because this has consequences through eternity. And that's why Hebrews chapter 12, it talks about God disciplining us. And that that was a sign that we belonged to Him. For whom the Lord loves, He disciplines, and He scourges every son whom He receives. But there's always a number of parents who say, oh, I can't bring myself to discipline my child. Oh, I just can't. I love him so much. Couldn't be further from the truth. If you love them, you will discipline them. If you love them, you will not withhold spiritual training. We've mentioned this before. They're not going to get that anywhere else. I don't want them to get spiritual training in a public school. They need to get that at home, as we've already suggested. That's where they need to be exposed to the Word of God, to God's expectations. We would not knowingly expose them to danger, hopefully. But if we knowingly expose them to moral dangers, that's spiritual child abuse. That's worse than the other one. So to the extent that we can, as they come into their adolescent years and teenage years, let's control the things that they are exposed to, again, as much as possible. We're not with them every hour of the day by that time in their life. But we can sure control the things that go on under our roof. And so don't allow them to be exposed to this kind of immorality if we can help it at all. Spiritual child abuse takes place if we set a bad example for them. Need to be good examples. Need to show them what a Christian is supposed to be. How a Christian is supposed to behave. The priorities of a Christian. That's all things that we, yes, we can talk about it, but more than that, we show them these things. Let's not abuse our children. Let's train them. Let's see the need, hopefully, and I think we all do, to train our children and not leave that responsibility up to someone else. But we leave this question with you. Do you know your children? You need to know them before you can train them. They're not all the same. I remember, and I think this is pretty much the experience of everyone that has more than one child. You think you got it figured out after that first child, don't you? Because I got this down. I know exactly what to do now when the second one comes along. And then guess what? That second child has a different disposition. Totally different from that first one. So what do you do with all those answers you've figured out? Well, of course, the big answers are still got to be there. The basics still there. But the particulars of training and dealing and discipline with that child, you're going to have to forget that. That's not going to be what works on that second one. Know your children. Know them individually. Know what will work best for them. Some children, at least I've been told, I didn't experience this, you just can look at them and they start crying. Now, it took a little more than that with my boys. And some you have to, there's physical punishment you have to administer. They're different. Find out what works. Recognize that difference. Make sure the same standard overall is used for every one of them. If you're here this morning, you're not a child of God. You're wayward, perhaps as a child of God. We give you this opportunity now while you have it, while we're going to offer it to you, while God is waiting for you, to make things right with Him while we stand and while we sing.